Osho, be still and know, responses to disciples' questions, given at the Osho Kami International, Pune, India. Discourse number 4.
The first question. Bhagwan, I have worn the mala for less than a month, but I understand how feeling you is important. But these feelings are mixed up. I respect and love you, but I don't look at you as His Holiness. It's strange, but I look at you as a Buddha. Only that, without anything added or taken away from your being. And what a Buddha is, I don't know. How come I love you? I respect you because you are my master, but love. Also, I feel that I can play with you with joy, and you are so far away, are so close. Respect, love, joy, are they the same? Anand Mario, it is good that you cannot think of me as His Holiness. Because I am neither His Holiness nor His Unholiness. It is good and beautiful that you think of me as a Buddha, because that's exactly what I am. Simply a Buddha. A Buddha means one who is awake. It has nothing to do with holiness, nothing to do with unholiness. Holiness, unholiness, both are dreams. For dreams, you have to be asleep. A Buddha is awake. All dreams have disappeared. A Buddha is not a saint, is not a sinner either. A Buddha is not God, and is not a devil either. All dualities are irrelevant as far as Buddha is concerned. Buddha is simply a witness of all the mystery that surrounds you, within and without. Mario, it is absolutely right. You are moving in the right direction. If you start looking at me as a Buddha, that is a fundamental step to understand me. If you think me as a saint, you have misunderstood me. That's one of the fundamental problems with Indians who come here. They start thinking about me as a saint, then 1001 problems arise, because they have certain ideas how a saint should be. They have 1001 expectations. How should I live? What should I eat? How should I talk? What I should say and what I should not say? I am not a saint. Hence, I cannot fulfill any of their expectations. Then they feel very frustrated. and out of frustration they become enraged. It has nothing to do with me. It is their own minds, their own expectations. I am not here to fulfill anybody's expectations. I am here to be myself, simply to be myself. I am not here to be somebody else's carbon copy. A jnana comes and thinks in terms of Mahavira and compares me with Mahavira. Certainly I am not a Mahavira. The Christian comes with the idea of Christ and starts comparing me with Christ. Certainly I am not a Christ either. I am simply myself. You can understand me only if you drop all comparisons. If you forget all the ideas that have been imposed on your minds. If you simply look at me without any prejudice, things will be very clear. Mario, it is good that a great clarity is coming to you. But still, somewhere deep down in the unconscious, there are hangovers. Hence you are puzzled. You are puzzled because you cannot understand how come I love you. Because saints are to be respected, not loved. They are so high there in the heavens and you are so low. How can you love them? Love means equality. Love means we are standing on the same plane. Saints are so holy and you are so unholy. Yes, respect is okay. But love seems to be impossible. These are hangovers. But I would like to say to you, respect is an ugly word. It has more letters than four, but actually it is a four-letter word. Respect is bound to be ugly in two ways. If you respect somebody, you degrade yourself into inferiority. Unless you start feeling inferior to somebody, you cannot respect. Hence all your sins go on condemning you. Unless you are condemned, they cannot be respected. Their respect from your side is dependent on the condemnation from their side. They call you sinners. Only then you can call them saints. They condemn everything that you do. Your eating, your drinking, your living, your whole life in every minute detail has to be condemned. All that is natural has to be condemned. Then their unnatural lives become very respectful. All the saints, the so-called saints, I mean, down the ages have been condemning humanity. and slowly, slowly, for centuries listening that you are sinners, you have become sinners. They have conditioned you into such inferiority that it has become almost a reality. You have started fulfilling what they have been telling about you. If you want a man to be a criminal, go on telling him that he is a criminal. Go on repeating it. And he will be slowly hypnotized. And if everybody repeats that he is a criminal, he will start believing that he must be so. How so many people can be wrong? And how so many saints can be wrong? I must be a criminal. And once a person accepts that he is a criminal, he becomes one. He starts behaving to prove that he is a criminal. How he can prove the saints wrong? The saints have to be proved to be right. And the only way to prove them right is to behave the way they say you are. Their saintliness depends on your being sinners. The greater you are in your sin, higher is their saintliness. I am not a saint. And because they have to condemn your natural instincts, they become unnatural, pathological. They start standing on their heads just to show that they are totally different from you. If you enjoy eating, they hate eating. If you love beauty, they condemn beauty. If you are enchanted with the world, they call the world illusion, Maya. It does not exist at all. If you love your body, they destroy their bodies. Whatsoever you do, they have to do just the opposite, because that is the only way to prove their superiority. Your so-called saints have created a very insane humanity. They have turned you insane, and they have turned themselves insane. And because they have to be unnatural, they are sitting on volcanoes. They have repressed all that is nature. And the nature wants to assert itself. They are in a constant civil war. They are fighting with themselves. And whatsoever they are fighting with is becoming stronger every day. Because the more you fight with something, the more you have to pay attention to it. Their minds become focused. If they repress sex, their 24 hours, there is an undercurrent of sexuality. If they fast, they think only of food and nothing else. These insane people, pathological people, have been very dominant in the past. It is because of these people the earth has become a hell. they have transformed the whole humanity in an ugly mess. I am not a saint. I am simply a man just like you, with only one small difference. And that difference does not make me superior than you. Remember it. It does not make you inferior than me. Remember it. Never for a single moment forget that you may be asleep and I may be awake. But one day I was asleep just like you. And one day you can be awake just like me. Sleep and waking are as much your potential as they are my potential. Sleep and waking are two sides of the same coin. And how one side can be superior than the other side? Both sides are of the same coin. You are asleep, I am awake. But this does not make me superior in any way. In fact, Buddha has said that the day he became a Buddha, the day he became enlightened, the whole universe became enlightened with him. What does he mean? He means the day he became enlightened, he became aware that everybody can become enlightened. This is nothing special. It is an ordinary quality of every being. You may not use it. That is your choice. You may not actualize your potential. That is your decision. And you are free to decide that way. You may choose to remain asleep. But you are not committing any sin. You are not doomed just because you are asleep. Any moment you can decide to wake up. It is your freedom to be a Buddha or not to be a Buddha. And if you like sleep and the dreams, it's perfectly okay with me. I respect your freedom. You can love me. You cannot love your saints. They are too far away. I'm just standing by your side. I'm not sitting on a golden throne somewhere high in the heavens. I'm walking on the earth with you. I'm as earthly as you are. Just a little difference. I say difference, not superiority. And the difference is that I am no more asleep, no more dreaming. And you can come out of your dreams this very moment, because dreams cannot hold you. They cannot keep you imprisoned in themselves. You can burst forth out of them. You are an imprisoned splendor, but you are imprisoned by your own choice. You have gone into the prison by your own choice. This is your decision. There is a beautiful story of a Zen monk who used to steal small things. He was a great enlightened master. And he used to steal small things, somebody's cigarette case, or somebody's shoes. And then he will be caught, and he will be sent to prison. His disciples were very much puzzled. He had many disciples. And they asked him again and again, why do you do such things? And we are ready here. How many cigarette boxes you want? How many shoes you want? We can bring as many as you want. Why do you steal? He will laugh and never say anything. But he continued in his own way. Only in the end, when he was dying, his disciples asked, now tell us, what was the secret? There must be something. He said, there is nothing much. It is a simple phenomenon. I wanted to go to the jail again and again to help the people who are inside to come out. And that was the only way. Stealing small things, then getting caught. I had to manage both. First steal things and then get caught. And then the magistrate will send me for 6 months to jail, and those 6 months I will try and help the people who are inside to come out. And I'm happy, tremendously happy that I have helped men to come out of the jail. Now this man is going knowingly, consciously. It is his choice. Even in the jail, he is a free man. He is not imprisoned by anybody else. He has imprisoned himself for a certain purpose. So is the case with you. You have imprisoned yourself. This simply proves your freedom. Any day, if you want to get out of it, you can get out of it. I go on hammering on your heads only one thing again and again, that there is another choice also. Please don't forget. You have chosen to be in sleep, you can choose to be awake. You have lived in sleep for many, many lives. You have seen all that sleep makes possible. Now please see what awakening can give to you. I have seen both. And I tell you that sleep cannot give you anything. It only promises but never delivers any goods. Sleep can give you only dreams, hallucinations. Sleep cannot fulfill you. I have known both. You have known only one. Those who have known both, listen what they are saying. And if you come close to them, you are bound to fall in love with them. It is not a question of respect. Respect is a formality. You respect the Christian priest. You respect the Hindu Mahatma. You respect the Jaina Muni. You respect the Catholic monk. You respect the Pope. You don't respect Christ or Buddha or Krishna. You love them. Respect is very ordinary. It brings no revolution in your life. It is a trick of the mind. The mind says, look how much I respect the holy people. And there it is finished. Now what more you can do? You can respect. Sometimes you can go and touch their feet. It becomes a formality. In India, it is such a formality. It has lost its beauty, its tremendous power to transform people. People go on touching each and everybody's feet. Children are taught from the very beginning to touch everybody's feet. In my childhood, it was so. Any Tom, Harry, Dick will come to my house. And if he is aged, my father will say, touch his feet. I was always puzzled, why? I don't see anything in the man. I have no feeling. But it is a formality. It is a social obligation. You have to do it. So I made it a point finally, why wait for my father to say? Anybody who will come, I will touch his feet before he will ever say. Then he started telling me that you need not touch everybody's feet. I said, why make any difference? And why give you any trouble to tell me again and again? Now I will touch everybody's feet, whosoever comes. It doesn't matter. It is just a physical exercise. It is good for the body. Just going down and standing up again and again, and the whole day people are coming. All kinds of stupid people. And they feel happy. So it is good. They enjoy it. In India, it is just a formality. It means nothing. Respect means nothing. And it is dangerous too. Because when you respect somebody, deep down, you start imitating. Because you would also like to be respected. The ego wants to be respected. So whomsoever you respect, sooner or later, unconsciously, you will start imitating him. Because that is the only way to get respect from people. Respect creates in you a desire for imitation. You become carbon copies. It is good, Mario, that you love me. Forget the word respect. Love is absolutely right. And don't be puzzled. You say, how come I love you? I respect you because you are my master. Yes, respect always has a because. Love has no because. Love is simply there for no reason at all. Respect is logical. You can say why you respect a person. He eats only once in a day. He has renounced the world, his wife, children, family, everything. He sleeps only for 3 hours. Or maybe he remains awake the whole night. He is continuously chanting the name of God. thinks like this? Or he serves the poor? Or he goes to the ill people and serves them? What will happen if poverty disappears? It will be a great loss to your sins. In fact, you will not believe it. One of the very respected Hindu saints, Karpatri, has written a book against socialism. And the reasons that he has given against socialism are all so stupid. The most stupid reason of all of them is that socialism will destroy poverty. It will make equal distribution of property and possessions. And if there are no more poor people, whom you will serve? And without service, how can you be a saint? Without service, there will be no virtue. This is great argument. This means poverty is needed, very essentially needed, needed for the existence of the saints. Ill people are needed, lepers and blind and lame and deaf people are needed, otherwise whom the missionaries will serve? And without serving, you cannot reach to heaven. Service is the ladder. So let people be poor. And when these people serve poor people, you respect them. In fact, they are the causes for poverty in the world. The poverty can be removed any day. Now science has made every technology available that can remove poverty from the earth absolutely. But then how Christian missionaries will be able to convert poor people to Christianity? In India, not even a single rich person has been converted to Christianity. Only poor people, very poor people. And they are converted to Christianity not because they love Christ, but because they love bread and butter. The Christian missionaries can supply them a little food, clothes, shelter, a school, a hospital. Now Christian missionaries will not like it at all that poverty disappears from the world. Neither the Hindu saints will like it. Karpatri also argues the old Hindu argument that the poor people are poor because they are suffering from their past karmas. If you make them rich, if you distribute the property and the land to the poor, you will be interfering in their past karmas. And this is not good. This is a sin to interfere into somebody's karma. Let them suffer. They deserve suffering. Helping the poor to become rich is almost like breaking the wall of the prison and letting the prisoners escape. You will be doing something very illegal. the poor people are suffering and the rich people are rich because they were virtuous in their past life. Any effort to take their money from them is to go against the law of life, the law of karma. You are going against God. Socialism is against religion according to Karpatri and the other so-called saints. This is a very strange world. But all these things go on because we are asleep. If we become a little bit alert and start looking around, you will be surprised. Your sins need psychoanalysis. Your sins need psychological treatment. They are utterly ill. And because they are repressing all their desires, sooner or later, they start living a double life. They start living two lives together, one on the surface, the saintly, and the real underground, from the back door. And you go on respecting the masks. It is good, Mario. I don't expect your respect for me. No, not at all. Love is enough. Love is right. Because love gives you equality with me. And as far as I am concerned, I see you as equals. Not only you, but the trees and the birds and the animals and the rocks. The whole existence is a brotherhood. Nobody is higher and nobody is lower. There is no hierarchy. It is only one God expressing in millions of forms. How can there be any hierarchy? There is no Brahmin and no Sudra. You say, I respect you because you are my master. Forget the respect. Love me because I am your master. And not for any formal reason. Because to be a disciple can never be formal. It can only be of the heart. You say, also I feel that I can play with you with joy, and you are so far away, are so close. Both are true. Simultaneously, I am far away. And too close. Too close because the awakening is just the other side of the coin. And too far because awakening takes you into a totally different world than sleep. Sleep takes you into dreams, awakening into reality. To be awake is the door to God. Yes, I am far away and yet very close by. You also ask, respect, joy, love, are they the same? No, they are not the same. Certainly respect and love are not same. Respect is a poor substitute for love, a plastic substitute for the real rose. It may appear like the rose, but it is not. It has no roots in the earth. No juices flow through it. It has no contact with the sun and the wind and the rain. It is disconnected from existence. It is simply a plastic flower. Apparently looks like a rose. It is imitation. Respect is a plastic flower. Love is a real rose. And joy never arises out of respect. In fact, out of respect, a little sadness arises if you have observed closely. Whenever you respect somebody, you feel humiliated. You may not look at your humiliation because it hurts. But whenever you respect somebody, there is humiliation. Because if somebody is superior, you are inferior. And the inferiority hurts. You can avoid it, you may not see it, you may keep it at the back, you may forget all about it. But it is there. If you search for it, you will always find it lurking in the darkness of your unconscious. Respect cannot give you joy, but love certainly gives you joy. Joy is a byproduct of love, the aura of love. Wherever love is, there is joy. There is silence. There is benediction. Anybody can see it here. You are sitting in such silence. You may be the only commune on the whole of the earth, sitting in such silence, in such love, engulfed, encompassed with something of the beyond. Others who don't know about love may misunderstand your love as respect because they know only respect. Those who have never seen any real rose may think that the plastic flower is the real rose. I have heard about an old woman who went to see an exhibition of Picasso paintings. She was very much puzzled looking at a painting. The cost was in millions of dollars. She said to her husband, "This is madness, this painting millions of dollars. And in fact, it is a copy of a calendar that is hanging in my bathroom for years." The calendar is a copy, but the woman has known the calendar for years. Now the real painting looks a copy of the calendar and millions of dollars. This man must be mad who is asking millions of dollars. I can give the calendar free to anybody. I am fed up with it because for years I have been seeing it. Those who don't know real roses and have always known the plastic, if you bring them to a rose bush, they will think that these are plastic flowers attached to the bush. People who come from the outside, seeing you sitting with me in deep communion, in deep love, your hearts beating with my heartbeats, will think that you are in deep respect. It is not respect at all. It is the real thing, not the synthetic flowers. It is happening. It is a rare opportunity. When there is somebody awake, many people who are groping in their sleep to be awake, longing in their sleep to be awake, start moving towards the source wherever awakening has happened. That's how you have arrived here, from far away countries. You may not be even alert how you have reached here. You may think it is just accidental. It is not. Many, many lives of longing, of finding a Buddha, of finding a Christ, have brought you here. You are ancient pilgrims. Now you have found the opportunity. Mario, you are fortunate to love, fortunate to feel the joy of love, fortunate because this love is going to become a door to the divine. The second question, Bhagwan, what is prayer? Deva Tattva prayer is one of the indefinables, because prayer is the fragrance of love. Even love is indefinable. Love is a flower. Tangible. You can see it, you can touch it, you can smell it, you can feel it, you can close your eyes and you can touch the texture of the flower, the softness of it, you can see the beauty of it. It is visible. But prayer is the fragrance released into the winds, offered to the sky. It becomes even more indefinable because you cannot see it, you cannot touch it. You can only have a very subtle relationship with it, not of words, not of philosophy, not of theology, but only the silence of your heart, utter silence of your heart, can have a little glimpse of it, what it is. What goes on in the name of prayer is not prayer. It is desire disguised. You go to the temple or to the church and you pray to God. Your God is part of your imagination. Your God is not true God. It is a Christian God. It is a Hindu God. It is a Mohammedan God. And how God can be Christian, Hindu or Mohammedan? It is a God that you have created, or your priest on behalf of you. It is a toy. It is not true. Bowing down before a statue made by men, manufactured by men, and you think you are in a prayer? You are simply being stupid. You are simply showing utter ignorance. This statue has been purchased from the marketplace, and God is not a commodity, and God cannot be made. It is God who has made us. How can we make God? But we are worshipping, praying before man-made gods. And what are your prayers? They are also your desires. You want this, you want that. You are trying to use God as a means. You have been told certain prayers from your very childhood, and you have crammed it. You have been forced to cram it. It has become a habit, a mechanical routine. You go on repeating it. But your heart is not in it. Your prayer is a corpse. It breathes no more. Yes, when Jesus called God Abba, He meant it. When you call God Father, you don't mean anything. And between Abba and Father, there is a great difference. Father is an institution. Legal. Social. Abba is a heart-to-heart relationship. Jesus looked at existence as the source of our life. A disciple asks Jesus, "What is prayer?" He falls on his knees and he starts praying. The disciple says, "I am asking, what is prayer? I am not asking you to pray." And Jesus says, "There is no other way. I can pray, you can participate, I invite you to be part of my prayer. I cannot say what prayer is, but I can go into prayer, because prayer is a state of being, not something that you do." Leo Tolstoy has written a beautiful story. Three men became very famous saints in Russia. The highest priest of the country was very much disturbed, obviously, because people were not coming to him. People were going to those three saints, and he had not even heard their names. And how they can be saints? Because in Christianity, a saint is a saint only when the church recognizes him as a saint. The word, English word saint, comes from sanction. When the church sanctions that somebody is a saint, then he is a saint. What nonsense! A saint has to be certified by the church, by the organized religion, by the priest. As if it has nothing to do with inner growth, but some outer recognition. As if it is a title given by a government, or a degree, honorary degree, conferred by an university. The high priest was certainly very much angry. He took a boat, because those three saints used to live beyond the lake. He went in the boat. Those three saints were sitting under a tree. They were very simple people, peasants, uneducated. They touched the feet of the highest priest, and the priest was very happy. And he thought, now I will put them right. These are not very dangerous people. I was thinking they will be rebels or something. He told them, how you became saints? They said, we don't know. We don't know that we are saints either. People have started calling us saints, and we go on trying to convince them that we are not. We are very simple people. But they don't listen. The more we argue that we are not, the more they worship. And we are not very good at argument either. The priest was very happy. He said, what is your prayer? Do you know how to pray? They looked at each other. The one said to the other, you say. The second said to the third, you say please. The priest said, you say, what is your prayer? Are you doing our Lord's prayer or not? They said, to be frank with you, we don't know any prayer. We have invented a prayer of our own, and we are very embarrassed. How to say it? But if you ask, we have to say. We have heard that God is a Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And we are also three, and He is also three. So we have made a small prayer of our own. You are three, we are three, have mercy on us. The priest said, what nonsense. Is this prayer? You fools, I will teach you the right prayer. And he repeated the Lord's prayer. And those three poor people said, please repeat once more, because we are uneducated, we may forget. He repeated twice, and they asked once more, we are three, at least three times you repeat. So he repeated again. And then, very happy, satisfied, he went in his boat back. Just in the middle of the lake, he was surprised. His boatman was surprised. Those three poor people were coming running on the water. And they said, wait, please one time more. We have forgotten the prayer. Now it was the turn for the priest to touch their feet. And he said, forget what I have said to you. Your prayer has been heard. My prayer has not been heard yet. You continue as you are continuing. I was utterly wrong to say anything to you. Forgive me. Prayer is a state of simplicity. It is not of words, but of silence. Martin Buber, the great Jewish philosopher, has said that prayer is a I-thou relationship. It is not. He does not know anything about prayer. I-thou relationship? In prayer there is no I, and in prayer there is no thou. A prayer is not a dialogue between I and thou. A prayer is a merger. The I disappears into the thou disappears into the I. There is nobody to say anything, and there is nobody to say anything to. The river disappearing in the ocean is prayer. The dewdrop is slipping from the lotus leaf into the lake is prayer. Seeing the early morning sun, and you are silent, and something starts rising in you too, that is prayer. A bird on the wing, and you are on the wing. You forget that you are separate. That is prayer. Wherever separation disappears, prayer appears. When you become one with the whole of existence, that is prayer. Ego is a state of no prayer. Egolessness is a state of prayer. It is not a dialogue. It is not even a monologue. It has nothing to do with words. It is wordless silence. It is an open, silent sky with no clouds, no thoughts. In prayer, you are not Hindu, nor Christian, nor Mohammedan. In prayer, you are not. In prayer, God is. The fourth question, Bhagwan, what is diplomacy? Sandeep, diplomacy is a beautiful name for all kinds of cunningnesses. It is a beautiful label for all that is ugly. It is an effort to cover the human violence, the human stupidity, the human cunningness behind a beautiful word. Diplomacy is simply an effort to dominate. It may be between persons, it may be between religions, it may be between countries, it does not matter. Even husbands and wives are in a diplomatic relationship. Parents and children are in a diplomatic relationship. It is not only politics. It is our whole life. When you see somebody and you feel that now my whole day is wasted, seeing this bastard early in the morning is a perfect indication that something wrong is going to happen. Some calamity is going to happen to me. But you say to the man, hello, How are you? Glad to see you. That is diplomacy. Diplomacy has entered into our blood. When you don't love your wife and pretend that you love her, it is diplomacy. When without any love you hug your children just because it has to be done, because Dale Carnegie says so, how to win friends and influence people? Dale Carnegie is the prophet of the modern age. Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, has sold only next to Bible. It seems to be even more important than Bible, because Bible is being distributed free by the Christian missionaries, and Dale Carnegie's book you have to purchase. And what he teaches is simply diplomacy. He says, even if you don't mean, at least few times in the day, remind your wife how much you love her. That's enough. Because people don't bother about love. People live in words. If you say, I love you, that's enough. If you go on repeating, I love you, that becomes a proof that you really love. This is a very ugly state of affairs. Humanity has fallen so low that Dale Carnegie becomes the prophet. Diplomacy is not only political, no more. It has entered into every arena of life. And wherever it enters, it brings pseudoness, falsity. It destroys authenticity, sincerity, honesty. It makes you say things which you don't mean. It makes you do things which you don't mean. It makes you many instead of one. You become a crowd. You go on carrying many masks with you, because one never knows which mask will be needed in a certain situation. And not only man has become diplomatic, even animals who live with man become diplomatic. Dogs become diplomatic. Watch a dog. A stranger comes to your house, knocks on the door. The dog starts two things. He starts barking, and at the same time he wags his tail. This is diplomacy, because he is not certain whether the man who has knocked on the door is really a friend of the master or not. So it is better to keep your feet in both the boats. So whatsoever turns right, you can withdraw from the wrong one. Then you come out of the house and the dog sees that the stranger is a friend. The barking stops and the tail continues to wag. Man contaminates everything. even innocent people like dogs are corrupted by human contacts. You start teaching small children to be diplomatic. On the one hand, you go on telling them, be true, be sincere, be honest. And then one day a man comes on the door and you tell your son, go and tell that daddy is out. Now the boy is puzzled. What to do? My own way in my childhood was going out and saying to the man that daddy says he is out. What else to do? One has to be true. And one has to be obedient too. No, either I can be true or I can be obedient. Small children, we start corrupting their minds. We corrupt animals. And it is possible one day to discover that we even corrupt trees, because they are also very sensitive. Living with men, they must be learning all kinds of things from humanity. Alfie and Dan, two cockney pub crawlers, were in their cups one afternoon when Alfie pointed to a woman sitting at the end of the bar. "Hey," he said, "that woman looks like Queen Elizabeth." "No," replied Dan. "What would the Queen be doing in a pub in Hogtown?" "I'm telling you, it is her," insisted Alfie. "Can't you see the resemblance? Look, that aren't the Queen," said Dan, "and I'm willing to bet 5 on it." "You are on," came the reply. "I will go ask her." He walked over to the woman sitting at the bar and said, "I beg your pardon, are you the Queen?" "Get lost, you little runt," growled the woman, "before I kick your ass across the room." He returned to his seat. "Well," his friend asked. "Well, she did not say she was, and she did not say she was not. This is diplomacy." A religious person has to drop all diplomacy. He has to be authentic, sincere. He has to be as he is. No pretensions. No false personalities. No facades. Just being utterly mute as you are. Utterly naked in your reality. The moment you can gather so much courage, you will be so filled with joy, you cannot believe right now, you cannot even conceive right now. Because it is our falsities which are like parasites on our being. They go on sucking our blood. The more falsities you create around yourself, the more miserable you become. The more you are in a hell. To live in falsities is to live in hell. To live authentically is to be in heaven. the fifth question. Bhagwan, to me it seems that the Christian concept of the soul is the same as what you mean by the real eyes, the one who is the watcher. Why did not Jesus speak about the possibility of reincarnation of the soul? This seems to be a difference between Eastern and Western religions. Can you say something about this? Jaap Willem, Jesus knew perfectly well about reincarnation. There are indirect hints spread all over the Gospels. Just the other day I was saying, quoting Jesus, that I was before Abraham ever was. I am before Abraham ever was. And Jesus says, I will be coming back. And there are 1001 indirect references to reincarnation. He knew about it perfectly well. But there is some other reason why he did not talk about it. Why did not he preach it? Jesus has been to India and he has seen what has happened because of the theory of reincarnation. In India, almost for 5,000 years before Jesus, the theory was taught. And it is the truth, it is not only a theory. The theory is based in truth. Man has millions of lives. It was taught by Mahavira, by Buddha, by Krishna, by Rama. All the Indian religions agree upon it. You will be surprised to know they don't agree on anything else except this theory. Hindus believe in God and soul. Jainas believe not in God at all, but only in souls. And Buddhists don't believe in soul or God either. But about reincarnation, all three agree. Even Buddhists agree, who don't believe in souls. A very strange thing. Then who reincarnates? Even they could not deny the phenomenon of reincarnation, although they could deny the existence of souls. They say the soul does not exist, but reincarnation exists. And it was very difficult for them to prove reincarnation without soul. It seems almost impossible. But they have found a way. Of course, it is very subtle and very difficult to comprehend. But they seem to be closest to the truth. It is easy to understand that there is a soul, and when you die, the body is left on the earth and the soul enters into another body, into another womb. It is a simple, logical, mathematical thing. But Buddha says there is no soul, but only a continuum. It is like you kindle a candle in the evening, and in the morning when you are blowing it off, a question can be asked to you, are you blowing the same light that you had started in the evening? No, it is not the same light. And yet, a continuity is there. In the night when you lighted the candle, that flame is no more there. That flame is continuously disappearing. It is being replaced by another flame. The replacement is so quick that you can't see the gaps. But with sophisticated scientific instruments, it is possible to see the gaps. One flame going out, another coming up. That going out, another coming up. There are bound to be small intervals, but you can't see them by bare eyes. Buddha says, just as the candle flame is not the same, it is changing constantly, although in another sense it is the same, because it is the same continuum. Exactly like that, there is no soul entirety in you, like a thing, but like a flame. It is continuously changing. It is a river. Buddha does not believe in nouns. He only believes in verbs. And I perfectly agree with him. He has come closest to the truth. At least in his expression, he is the most profound. But why Jesus, Moses, Muhammad, all the three religions that have been born outside India have not talked about reincarnation directly? For a certain reason. And the reason is that Moses was aware, because Egypt and India have been in constant contact. It is suspected that one day Africa was part of Asia. The continent has slowly shifted away. India and Egypt were joined together. Hence, there are so many similarities. And it is not strange that the South India is black. It has part of Negro blood in its veins. It is Negroid. Not totally, but if Africa was joined with Asia, then certainly the mingling of the Aryans with the Negroes must have happened. And the South India became black. Moses must have been perfectly aware of India. You will be surprised that Kashmir claims that Moses and Jesus both are buried there. The tombs are there. One tomb for Moses and one tomb for Jesus. They have seen what has happened to India through the theory of reincarnation. Because of the theory of reincarnation, India became very lethargic. There is no hurry. India has no time sense, not even now. Even everybody is wearing a wristwatch, but no time sense. If somebody says, I will be coming 5 o'clock in the evening to see you, it can mean anything. He may turn up at 4, he may turn up at 6, he may not turn up at all. And it is not taken seriously. It is not that he is not fulfilling his promise. There is no time sense. How can you have time sense when eternity is available? When there are so many lives, why be in such a hurry? One can go on slowly. One is bound to reach one day or other. The theory of reincarnation made India very lethargic, dull. It made India utterly time unconscious. It helped people to postpone. And if you can postpone for tomorrow, then today you will remain the same as you have been, and the tomorrow never comes. And India knows to postpone, not even to tomorrow, but the next life. Moses, Jesus, both visited India. Both were aware. Muhammad never visited India, but was perfectly aware, because he was very close to India, and there was constant traffic between India and Arabia. They decided that it is better to tell to people that there is only one life, that this is the last chance, the first and the last. If you miss it, you miss forever. This is a device to create intense longing, to create such intensity in people that they can be transformed easily. Then the question arises, was Mahavir, Buddha, Krishna not aware, they were not aware that this theory of reincarnation will create lethargy? They were trying a totally different device. And each device has its time. Once it is used, it cannot be used forever. People become accustomed with it. When Buddha, Mahavir and Krishna tried the device of reincarnation, they were trying it from a totally different angle. India was a very rich country in those days. It was thought to be the golden country of the world, the richest. And in a rich country, the real problem, the greatest problem, is boredom. That is now happening in the West. Now America is in the same situation. And boredom has become the greatest problem. People are utterly bored. So bored that they would like to die. Krishna, Mahavira and Buddha used this situation. They told people that this is nothing. One life's boredom is nothing. You have lived for many lives. And remember, if you don't listen, you are going to live many lives more. You will be bored again and again and again. It is the same wheel of life and death moving. They painted boredom in such dark colors that people who were already bored even with one life became really very deeply involved with religion. One has to get rid of life and death. One has to get out of this wheel, this vicious circle of birth and death. Hence, it was relevant in those days. Then India became poor. Once the country became poor, boredom disappears. A poor man is never bored, remember. Only a rich man can afford boredom. It is rich man's privilege. A poor man is impossible to feel boredom. He has no time. The whole day he is working. When he comes home, he is so tired. He falls asleep. He need not have many, many entertainments, television and movie and music and art and museums. He need not have all these things. He cannot have. His only entertainment is sex, a natural thing, inbuilt. That's why poor countries go on reproducing more children than rich countries. The only entertainment. If you want to reduce the population of poor countries, give them more entertainment. Give them television sets, give them radios, movie, something that can keep them distracted from sex. I have heard about American couples that they become so much obsessed with the television that even while making love, they go on seeing the television. Love becomes secondary. Television becomes primary. They don't want to miss the program that is going on. A poor country knows only one entertainment. Because it cannot afford any other. It can afford only the natural inbuilt. So a poor country goes on producing people. It becomes crowdier and crowdier. And they are not fed up with life. What life they have. First you have to have life to be fed up with it. You have to have money to be fed up with it. You have to have many women to be fed up with them. You have to have many experiences of the world to be finished with it. The moment India became poor, the theory of reincarnation became an escape, a hope, rather than a boredom, but a hope, a possibility to postpone. I am poor in this life, nothing to be worried, there are many lives. Next life I am going to strive a little harder and I will be richer. This life I have got an ugly woman, nothing to be worried, it is only a question of one life. Next time I am not going to do the same mistake again. This time I am suffering from my past karmas. This life I will not commit any wrong things so that I can enjoy the coming life. It became postponement. Jesus cites that the device is no more working. No more working in the way it was meant to work. The situation has changed. Now, Jesus has to create another device. There is only one life. So if you want to be religious, if you want to meditate, if you want to become a sannyasin, be right now. Because the tomorrow is not reliable. There may be no tomorrow. Hence, the West has become too conscious of time. Everybody is in a hurry. This hurry is because of Christianity. The device has again failed. No device can work forever. My own experience is a particular device works only while the master is alive. Because he is the soul of it. He manages it in such a way that it works. Once the master is gone, the device falls out of use, or people start finding new interpretations about it. Now in the West, the device has failed utterly. Now it has become a problem. People are in constant hurry, tension, anxiety, because there is one life. Jesus wanted them to remember, because there is one life, remember God. And what they are doing? Seeing that there is only one life, they want to drink, eat, and be merry, because there is no other life. So indulge as much as you can. Squeeze the whole juice of life right now. And who cares about what will happen on the judgment day? Who knows whether the judgment day is there or not? The professor at a girls' college was a really dirty old man. He could not give a lecture without making some kind of obscene remark. Eventually, the girls decided that the next time he did it, they would all get up from their desks and leave the classroom. The next morning, the professor entered the room and started in right away, "Hey, girls, I heard that just yesterday a ship came into the harbor with 30 Negro sailors on deck. Just imagine, girls, 30 huge Negro pricks." At this point, the whole class got up and started to go out of the room. "Hey, girls," shouted the professor after them, "no need to hurry. They are gonna stay here for another 2 weeks." A great hurry has arisen in the West about everything, because there is no other life. Mary and John are both living in a big apartment house in New York City. One day, they meet and instantly fall in love with each other, but they don't make any contact. This goes on for 6 months, until John just can't bear the tension anymore and asks her to come to his apartment for a drink. Hesitatingly, she says yes, and as soon as they reach his flat, they close the door behind them and rush into the bedroom and throw themselves on the bed. After a few minutes, John explains with a hoarse voice, "Listen, I am very sorry, but if I had known that you were a virgin, I would have taken more time." Mary replies, "Well, if I had known that you had more time, I would have taken my pants off." Such a hurry. Speed is the mania. Faster and faster. Nobody is bothered, where are you going? But fast you have to go. invent speedier vehicles. And this whole thing has happened because of the device. It worked in Jesus' time. He was continuously telling his people, beware, the day of judgment is very close by. You are going to see the end of the world in your very life. And there is no other life. And if you miss, you will be thrown in hell for eternity. He was simply creating a psychological atmosphere. It worked when he was alive, and it worked for a few days more when he was gone. It continued to work for a few days because of the closest disciples who had something of the climate of Jesus with them, some aura. But then it created just the opposite. It has created the most worldly civilization the world has ever known before. And the desire was that the idea of one life will make people so much alert and aware that they will seek and search God, and they will drop all other desires and all other occupations. Their whole life will become one pointedly a search, an inquiry for God. That was the idea behind the device. But the ultimate result is that people have become absolutely worldly because there is no other life, only one life. Enjoy it the most you can. Enjoy it. Don't postpone it for tomorrow. The Indian device failed because people became lethargic. It worked with Buddha. He really created one of the greatest movements in the world. Thousands of people renounced their life, became sannyasins. That means they devoted their whole energy into search for truth, because he created such an atmosphere of boredom that you will be bored if you miss. But what happened later on is just the opposite. It is going to be always so. The masters are bound to be misunderstood. And people are so cunning, so diplomatic, they can always find ways to destroy the whole device. Jesus perfectly knows that life is eternal, reincarnation is a fact. He mentions it in indirect ways, maybe to his very close disciples he mentions about it, but not to the masses, for a simple reason. He has seen it has failed in India. Something else has to be tried. I am creating many devices because others have failed. I know perfectly well that my devices will be functioning only while I am here. They are bound to fail as every other device has failed. I am not living in any fool's paradise thinking that my devices will remain forever as I will create them. When I am not there, people are going to distort them. But that is natural. It has to be accepted. There is nothing to worry about it. Hence, those who are here, please be alert and use these devices as deeply as possible. While I am here, these devices will function perfectly well. In my hands, they can be. Great situations for inner transformation. But once my hands are no more visible, the same devices will be in the hands of the pandits and the scholars. And then the same story will be repeated as it has been in the past. Beware, be watchful, don't waste time. Enough for today.